Welcome to Studio Tulsa on Health. I'm John Schumann, sitting in for Rich Fisher. Thomas Edison is credited with having said that genius is 1% inspiration and 99% perspiration. My guests today, two young Tulsa entrepreneurs, exemplify that dictum. Matt Scoville was in the shower brainstorming how much an upcoming medical appointment would cost him when a light bulb went off. What kinds of things do we buy without knowing the price ahead of time, he wondered. Along with his cousin and business partner, Nathan Gilchrist, Scoville decided to do something about it. Together, they've started a company called MediFi, which seeks to develop a smartphone application that tells users the actual prices of medical services with the touch of a button. With a goal of providing transparency and information, MediFi seeks to transform runaway healthcare spending by directing patients to the lowest price options for medical tests ordered by their doctors. How much difference could it make? In the Tulsa market, for example, the price of a CAT scan test could cost anywhere from $300 to $6,000 depending on where it's performed. A lot of this has to do with insurance network effects, something the MediFi application takes into account. Employers that provide group health insurance are interested in providing such data to their employees to incentivize them to find the most effective healthcare at the lowest possible price, both overall and out of pocket to them. MediFi seeks to fill that information void. Nathan Gilchrist and Matt Scoville, the founders of MediFi, a Tulsa-based startup, are my guests today on Studio Tulsa on Health. Matt Scoville and Nathan Gilchrist, welcome to Studio Tulsa on Health. So the name of the company is MediFi, and we'll start with you, Matt. What does MediFi do?
MediFi is a price transparency app for medical shopping. So if you get health benefits through your employer and you're looking to shop for medical procedures of any kind, we can show you how much it's going to cost you, how much it's going to cost your employer before you go so that you can effectively choose what we hope you'll choose is the cheaper, higher quality healthcare in your network.
Nathan Gilchrist, where do you get your data? How do you know what the price of a medical procedure is?
We work with the company and also with the payer to get all the data that we need to reconstruct the prices for all these procedures. And it's not only for just one-off procedures, it's the entire episode of procedures. So, you know, I mean, for instance, if you're getting a colonoscopy, it's every piece that goes into the colonoscopy, the doctor fee, the facility fee, anesthesia fee. So you actually get an exact price for that entire procedure.
Wow. I mean, that's really something because I've had this experience with patients of my own that I've cared for where I might even be able to get them, say, the price of a specific procedure, like you say, the technical piece, like the colonoscopy itself. But I have no idea if there's an anesthesia fee, a facility fee. Those are absolute mysteries. So that's incredible that your app can actually give all those pieces of data.
Yeah, the interesting thing about it is that for what we call commoditizable procedures, these are generally one-off procedures with high degrees of price variance and low degrees of complications, they tend to fall into the same categories in terms of what makes them up. So, you know, you'll have a medical procedure that will, you know, 90% of the time, since it's fairly standard, have two, three, four components. And we can actually use our algorithms in the app to reconstruct from the data what those four components are and what their associated costs are so that you can see, and this is all done on the back end, you know, it's complex on the back end, very simple to see on the front end. You know, we'll say colonoscopy will cost you $600 and, you know, you're getting an episode of care price from that. And on the back end, it's grouped those things together automatically.
Is the $600, this is always a confusing thing, is that what the patient, is that the like full sort of, so to speak, retail price, the insurance negotiated price, is that what the patient pays or is that what their insurance is going to pay?
That's actually what the actual person pays. So we show them in the app what their payment amount is and also what the company's payment amount is. Because, you know, so many employees have high deductible health care plans and the company is picking up the tab for a lot of these things. So a lot of the companies wanted us to show their portion that they pay for that medical service in addition to what the employer has to pay also straight out of pocket.
And so, well, explain how the model works. It's not sure. So I can't just go to the app store, download this app to my phone. It's got to be through my health insurance that's through my employer.
That's right. So our main market are self-insured employers. And since they each have their own doctor networks that they're leasing, pricing is specific to these networks and the providers within those networks. So no, you can't go to the app store and just download it. We work with your employer. And then we say, okay, within your employer network, these are your providers for this procedure. This is what they charge. There's a large variance in what they're charging. So, and you can see out of pocket, you know, like Nathan mentioned, one of the great reasons that this is such a great thing right now is that many employers have moved to high deductible health plans in an effort to lower premium costs. So now you have an employee who may be responsible for the first $6,000 out of pocket. So now they have a very strong vested interest in finding out the cost for these procedures. It's turned them into consumers. The problem is there's still a gap between being motivated now because you're spending your own money and actually being able to find out the procedure cost. If anybody that's ever called around, you either find that it's extremely difficult or impossible to find out what the actual cost is. Sometimes the doctors don't even know. And so that's the beauty of the app, is that we're able to customize that by employee, by employer network, and show you what you're going to actually pay.
Do you guys ever have trouble getting prices?
We do sometimes. It's a little bit of a dance most of the time, but we've never not been able to get a data set that we've needed.
The nice thing is for these companies, this data belongs to them. It's their property.
So for the companies
yes,
that work with
correct,
you. Okay,
correct.
Interesting. And so, and as you pointed out, these are all companies that self-insure. That is, they pay the essentially the, I guess, full cost of their employees' health insurance. But the way that they lower the premium cost is by charging the employee. The employee is responsible for a high deductible.
That's right.
Interesting. And so are you in like what we call beta, or is this is live? Do you have actual customers already working, or can you?
We
talk
do
about
have
that?
Some. We don't go too much into that, but we do have some customers. We did do beta. You know, when you're doing what's called a SaaS model, software as a service, it's live software through an app. You never really are ever done with it. It just constantly iterates. It's no longer really, you know, the old software model was you build an early version, test. You know, now it's kind of like you're constantly testing, constantly building. You know, and then you release as you go, rather than build, test, release version 1.0. Now it's build, release, test. You know, it's kind of an iterative process to software development. So
that's interesting. I just want to, I guess, go on that digression for a second. Is that I hear echoes, and maybe it's my own perception, but of healthcare.gov, where they kind of built up this sort of healthcare.gov 1.0, and it was a disaster.
Right.
And almost like they learned from that, it needed to be an iterative process.
It's very iterative, yeah.
And is that just in the last couple of years that it's been that way, like a new software? You said, I wasn't familiar with what you, SaaS?
SaaS. So it stands for software as a service. Back in the old days, what they would do is a software company would, like I was saying, they would do a huge internal build of a piece of software, then ship it to the stores. And then there might be a patch, or they would release version 2.0 that would patch a bunch of the bugs. Now, because of the advent and the widespread distribution of broadband, now people have powerful enough phones, computers, and fast enough internet where they can actually interact with the software remotely. So the software is not even really resident on their machine. It's actually resident on someone else's computer, a server, and they're just connecting to it and interacting with it. You do this with online banking. You do this with almost all software now is on that model.
I mean, is that when you say that someone else's server, that's the cloud or that's not?
Right.
The cloud?
Yeah, okay. That's what we call the cloud.
Yes.
It's always been there. They just market it as the capital C yeah. cloud. And the app is kind of a mixture. So the app is resident on your phone, but it's calling to our servers and we're pushing information to it on the fly.
So you're literally updating it
as we go.
That is absolutely incredible. You're listening to Studio Tulsa on Health. I'm John Schumann sitting in today for Rich Fisher. My guests are Matt Scoville and Nathan Gilchrist. They're the co-founders of a new Tulsa-based startup company called Medify, which seeks to bring transparency to healthcare pricing here in Tulsa. And guys, there is a good story about how the company started. And I don't know, I think I read it maybe in the Tulsa World, Matt's version of it. Nathan, do you have a version, or did Matt come to you with the idea?
He can usually sum it up pretty well.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, so you know they say you build the things you want to use yourself, and it's true. In this case, one day, it was January 2012, I was in the shower where I honestly did my best thinking, and and I was trying to figure out how much one of my upcoming doctor's appointments was going to cost. And what was bothering me about that particular event was I had called the doctor's office earlier that day and asked to know how much it was going to cost to go, and they couldn't tell me. You know, I didn't have a lot of interaction with the healthcare system, and I'm a young guy. I don't use healthcare very often, so this was kind of one of my first personal touches with the healthcare system, and I just found that to be really ridiculous, that I was expected to buy a service that no one could tell me how much it was going to cost. And so I decided then and there that we would build an app that would basically tell you how much medical services are going to cost before you go. And that's where we started. I came to Nathan with the idea, and 3 days later, we founded Medify and worked backwards from the solution.
Wow. You founded the company 3 days later.
That's right.
What were you doing at the time?
We owned a web design business together. And so, you know,
we've been doing that for what, 2 or 3 years, I think?
Right. Yeah.
And we were complete outsiders of healthcare. So yes. We didn't even realize how big of a problem it was when we first started, or the learning curve that we were going to experience in the next 2 years.
Steep learning curve.
But it worked out well.
So you neither of you went to medical school?
Neither. No.
Is that an asset or a drawback?
Honestly, we found it to be a huge asset.
Absolutely.
You know, what's interesting is that this had been approached before by, you know, large insurers. It had been approached, you know, the whole price transparency thing had been approached by doctor groups, medical groups. And there were certain limitations that they bumped into kind of trying to build this type of solution from the inside. We were total outsiders, so we weren't aware of the limitations until we had exceeded them. And people, I mean, I remember early on, there were people vested in the system that said, oh, guys, this isn't going to work. And we're like, well, it's already working. And then they'd see it, and then they'd be shocked.
Wow. Yeah. What, so, okay, so can you give an example of one of those problems that, that they had in previous attempts to do this?
Sure. So one of the biggest downfalls was that they were, you know, a lot of groups were trying to get doctors just to self-report prices. You know, that was one of the major ways that they approached it. Well, doctors either didn't self-report prices because A, they didn't know them themselves, B, many insurers, and luckily this practice is dying out, but at the time, many insurers would gag physicians from actually talking about their rates with each other or disclosing them to anyone. And so
they were like trade secrets or something.
Right. They were trade secrets. That's exactly right.
One insurance company would pay me something, but the other, I would negotiate with the other company.
That's correct.
The one insurance company thought they got a better deal. They didn't want to let, they didn't want the other people to know
about
it.
Right. It was a contractual secret in many cases. And there were some other limitations. And so the problem with that was that that particular model didn't scale. You know, we could try and build a giant network where we went out and called a bunch of doctors. You run into what's called the Groupon problem going in that model. The Groupon problem was in 2009, Groupon had 35 employees. In 2011, 2 years later, they had about 12,000 employees, and they had burned $500 million in investor equity building that this network because they had to hire thousands of people to call thousands of merchants in thousands of towns to try and get them to offer Groupons. And so we were going to run into the same problem trying it from that, from the physician side.
I mean, just hearing the word Groupon is such a like reminder of the past. Does it? I mean, I think it still exists, but I don't ever hear about it anymore.
It does still exist.
It just took them years to turn a profit. And so that scared investors. When we first approached our first round of investment, the investors basically said, that whole model we will not fund. So you need to go back to the drawing board. We love the idea, but you need to go back to the drawing board and figure out a better way to scale this. You know, it's great in Tulsa, but what happens when you leave Tulsa? How do you scale it? And, you know, if a company in Indianapolis calls you. And so we worked for the business, on the business model for a year before we built anything and received our first investment.
How do you answer that question? Or can you answer it now? I mean, that is, how do you, if how many employees do you have right now?
So we have about five right now, including Nathan and I. You know, we're a startup still. It's three programmers, and then Nathan and I do coordination and sales. You know, that's how all great startups start.
That is lean.
Did
you guys
lean.
Work out of a garage somewhere?
We do not. We did. When we first started, it was a guest bedroom.
It was. Yeah, it was a guest bedroom.
In the house that we shared with two other dudes. But
I was in a bedroom, and Matt was in a common area.
Yeah. I was like in some kind of weird living room type arrangement. But so the great thing about the model is that with using the computers that we have, you know, they do a ton of the work. And so we're able to get a ton of work done with a few hands. And we'll scale as we begin to scale. We've only been actively growing the company. We spent several years in development on the software, on the steep learning curve, and on you know, just the scale model, the business model itself. And now we've been, you know, out the door, so to speak, only in the last about 5 months. So,
okay, but so the let's call it the Indianapolis problem, the Groupon problem.
Yep.
So Groupon had to hire up, you know, thousands of employees to literally, you said, call the companies and find the deals and do the business development, as it was. So I still don't get the part about how you're scalable. That means you're going to ramp up this technology for thousands of users, maybe millions of users, if things go really well. Is it all going to be with six employees, or, you know, 20, you know, or are you going to at some point have to scale up to thousands of employees? Because you're saying no, because the computing power is so much better even than it was in 2009.
Yes.
You're able to get that price information or to let the automated tools bring it together.
Both,
and
really.
That's what the app is. That's the secret sauce, is what the app
The secret sauce is the app, and then the business model. Both are very strong, and that lets us scale. So we had to design it so that if a company in Indianapolis called me, I could service them tomorrow.
Are you serious?
Yes.
Wow.
And it's all done by working one-on-one with the employer and the data that we collect. Basically, the system uses fuel. You know, we're working from the inside out versus the outside in. And that was the mistake that everyone had made from the 80s until now, was trying to go from the outside in. We work from the inside out, and we involve the company more than the providers.
Okay. Let me ask you another thing. So let's go back to, first of all, what's great, I'll just, my own editorial here, about you guys doing this, and I was kidding you about not having MD degrees or whatever, because you clearly bring that outsider's perspective of like what I call real people.
Yeah.
Like here you had this real world problem. How much is my doctor's visit going to cost me? And nobody could give you a satisfactory answer. Right. So you had this moment of inspiration. And clearly I've seen years of perspiration, right? Of you guys putting effort into this, into this endeavor.
A lot of frustration, but.
So I'm a user. I'm lucky enough, let's say my company or my, in my case, my university, they I have health insurance. That's a blessing. And so, and I go on this app, or I'm lucky that let's say my insurance or my employer uses Medify. I go on my app, or let's say I go to my doctor and he says, you need an MRI of your knee or something. I injured it playing basketball. What's going to incentivize me? Oh, so you mentioned the high deductible. So
yes.
I'm going to pay out of pocket probably for a significant portion, if not all of that MRI. So I'm definitely incentivized to go for the lowest price. Are there other tools you're seeing, or is that not really your problem? Because I've read about, or even NPR had a Planet Money story about a company out of, I think, New Hampshire, where they do a similar kind of thing with pricing, where the variability in an MRI or a CAT scan, for example, is tremendous, thousands of dollars. And to incentivize the patients to use the lower price but equally effective option, they'll mail you a check, $25 or $50, that's part of that savings. Now, does Medify, can you do things like that to incentivize people?
Absolutely. We're actually playing around with that for probably version 2.0. Ways to incentivize people. Because, I mean, really, a ridiculous but real-world example is, for instance, if I was an employer, I could fly one of my employees to Dallas for the, you know, $250 CT scan, put them up for, you know, almost an entire weekend, give them a $500 voucher, fly them back, and it's still cheaper than going to the average hospital in just about any major city.
Wow.
Which is a ridiculous thing to do.
The hospitals don't really want you to know that necessarily, right?
Correct. You know, things like imaging are a very high profit center. And, you know, hospitals have higher overhead and whatnot. But from a consumer standpoint, you don't care. You're out to get the best deal you can get, just like you do when you shop for anything else. Houses, cars, shoes. You know, everyone's looking for the highest quality for the lowest price. And so, you know, that's what Medify does. And so traditionally, there was no real incentive because you had, you know, a low deductible and you had health insurance and they paid everything. So people spent, you know, and they didn't really care. Now with the move towards high deductibles, and there's been a giant spike in high deductibles, there's also been a giant spike with companies self-insuring. Now both the company and the employee have a very large vested interest in seeing very cost-effective care come down the pipe. So that's where Medify comes in. We bridge that gap.
So the example we talked about of the hospitals, of it being so much less costly that you could afford, you know, and the I've read about this. The New York Times had a great series called Paying Till It Hurts about the exorbitant cost of healthcare, where people could take a limousine from Manhattan all the way to Buffalo and be put up in a nice hotel, have the surgery and the limousine back, and it would still be cheaper than the price in some of the Manhattan hospitals. Are the hospitals, you know, obstructive to you in any way? I mean, in terms of sharing their pricing or not wanting you to succeed in a sense because you're going to drive business away from their profitable centers?
Our whole goal is to stimulate competition because whenever you introduce transparency into a closed system, prices go down, quality goes up because now people have to compete for the patient. We're just bringing a very old concept into a new place. Without transparency, you really can't have what we call true market drivers. So the nice thing about Medify is that we actually, you know, like we've been saying, we reveal that pricing and let you make the right choice. Now, when it comes to hospitals and things, you know, we say hospitals clearly have a place. They're very important in any city. And they provide very high-level care that you can't get anywhere else. You know, you don't want to get a complex surgery, you know, in your living room, for instance. You know, that's ridiculous. But for more commoditizable one-off procedures, they tend to be market leaders in terms of cost. So, for instance, a CT scan, very common. You're going to get a CT scan ordered all the time, you know, when you're in primary care. The hospitals tend to charge about 10 times the market rate for that.
10 times?
10 times is what we found. So, for instance, here in Tulsa, a CT scan runs anywhere from $300 to almost $6,000, depending on where you go. It's the same machines, same technicians, same doctors reading the machines. Just depending on where you go is the dependent on what type of price modifier or a price multiplier that you see for that. So one of the great things about the app is we say, okay, you could go to the hospital and get your CT scan. Or you could go to this place that's half a mile from the hospital where they're going to charge you 8 to 10 times less. You're going to pay this much out of pocket. Your employer is going to pay this much. And you're going to save, you know, what could be $3,000, $4,000 in one episode for yourself and your company. And then, you know, you start to see when people are on high deductible health plans and they have to pay all that out of pocket to begin with, that suddenly becomes a really good idea.
You're listening to Studio Tulsa on Health. I'm John Schumann. I'm sitting in today for Rich Fisher. My guests today are Matt Scoville and Nathan Gilchrist. They're the co-founders of a Tulsa startup company called Medify, which seeks to bring transparency and competition to the healthcare marketplace. And gentlemen, we were talking about how Medify can bring price transparency, how consumers or patients who are lucky enough to have access to this app will be able to price out procedures. I wonder, from the doctor's point of view, now if it's the patient, him or herself, who's reliant because they're going to pay a high price out of pocket, they're going to want to go to the more cost-effective place, do you have any reason to worry about educating the doctors or the nurse practitioners or the physician assistants who are going to be ordering these tests on where they can go, or will they be able to use the app? You know, is there a sort of a medical provider's version of it?
We're actually working on a version of it for the doctor. So, for instance, you know, I mean, if you're in the doctor's office and you're a doctor that uses our service, they could be like, you know, hey, John, you need a CT scan. He whips up the app, views your choices, see, you know, which provider is actually in your network, and then which one is the most cost effective for you to also do. And on the flip side of that, if the employee had it also, our best case scenario for that is the employee is in the doctor's office. The doctor says, hey, you need a CT scan, MRI, colonoscopy. They pull the app right there, and then they can review the choices with their doctor and make the best one for them. Because sometimes the lowest price isn't, you know, the absolute best for that employee, and it's great to have that back and forth with their doctor right in the office.
So, right, so bringing cost and effectiveness, or cost effectiveness as the phrase may be, to the discussion, to have a more informed discussion. I think that's really good. I want to shift gears a little bit and ask you guys about your own stories. I didn't really know this beforehand, but you guys told me you're cousins.
That's right.
So that's how you got into
family business.
Family business. I like it. So you guys have known each other, I guess, since you were born.
Since birth.
Okay.
Since birth.
And did you grow up together or nearby, or did you see each other like growing up or go to school together?
I grew up in Iowa, but we were down in Tulsa quite a bit. And then I decided to go to OSU for college.
And did you both go to OSU?
We did.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
I convinced him on that.
Now, were you the same year in college, or were you slightly?
No, I'm about 2 years older than
okay.
Nate. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and so and at OSU, did you study computing or healthcare, or what did you guys? You're smiling.
I was a civil engineering major. Actually, I was every engineering, and then I decided finally at the last year to decide on civil engineering. So it was completely outside of anything I'm doing now.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
How to think about a problem maybe and like
yeah, you know,
construct
I mean,
a solution.
If it did one good thing, it taught you how to solve problems.
Okay.
So after about five or six interviews, I was like, I really picked the wrong major. This is not what I want to be doing.
Wow.
Yeah, I took a very circuitous route, double majored in international business and marketing, so business was my thing. And when I was in eighth grade, I decided I wanted to be a lawyer, so I went to law school here at TU, actually, and then decided to get my MBA, and I did that. And then when we were both interviewing at the same time, we were actually both graduating at the same time, I remember I was flying home from an interview in Dallas. I just knew we had to start a business, and Nate and I had talked about it forever. And Nathan was interviewing. I actually called him from the plane. I paid for the Wi-Fi phone. I couldn't wait till we touched down. I was like, Nathan, this is the worst. Just cancel your interviews. I'm canceling mine right now. We're going to start a business.
And that was before you had this idea.
Yes, it was.
Exactly.
Oh, wow.
I had just got done with an interview with an asphalt company. I was like, okay.
Hard decisions.
It's rough. Yeah.
Wow. Well, you guys had the conviction. It's really interesting. So I want to also ask you about the Tulsa business community. Now, Tulsa is developing, I think, a very good reputation. We just saw the grand opening of 36 Degrees North, which is another incubator for entrepreneurial ideas. You guys have a little bit of a story of community support from the Tulsa Regional Chamber. Tell us a little bit about that and what your experience has been.
Sure.
Yeah, so we after we took our first round of investment, we headquartered at a business incubator called The Forge, which is in downtown Tulsa. Honestly, one of the best business decisions we ever made. What was awesome about The Forge was, in addition to having a really cool, you know, area for us to develop our business, great office space, heavily subsidized by the chamber, so it was affordable for startups to utilize. They also were really good about bringing in people that could help startups, but we probably wouldn't normally be able to interact with. They brought in, you know, powerful people from the community. They brought in business leaders. They brought in people that we could use for help that we couldn't necessarily afford, like lawyers and accountants. Mm-hmm. So the underlying kind of infrastructure support that a startup needs but can't necessarily buy, they did a great job. But one of the really the best things, you know, just kind of the serendipitous interactions you get where, you know, random business leaders would be in The Forge touring it or offering their services, and we would get a chance to talk with them one-on-one. And that's actually how we ran into our second round of investment was Chris Wright, who's CEO of Reliant Software, was there doing a presentation. And, you know, talking to him about how he built his business over the last 16 years. And Nathan and I were like, this guy's, you know, awesome. We need to take him to lunch. And then that one thing led to another. And that's how we raised our second round of investment.
And so what's the relationship now with Reliant? Are you part of Reliant or no? They just are an investor in the company.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah. Besides, you know, investment, they've also provided, you know, a lot of mentorship. I mean, they build software products. So it's a perfect place to be. And then they've been able to coach us through that. And also the sales trail too. I mean, we sell to the same types of companies in the same departments. So they were able to really give us a lot of mentorship and coaching through that because we had never done it. You know, being outsiders, mm-hmm. we were first timers at all of this. And they did a great job of kind of flattening the learning curve and kind of getting us there faster.
So any regrets in starting your own business? Sounds like a silly question, but...
Depends if you ask my wife or not.
You just had a second child.
I did. So, you know, I mean, honestly, I have zero regrets in starting a business. I mean, you know, you're working for yourself. You're setting your own hours, even though those hours are long and haven't taken a vacation in 5 years, I think.
Oh, my goodness.
But, you know, I mean, you're doing something for yourself. You're doing something that matters, that you can really get behind and you can put, you know, your blood and sweat into. And it's not just, you know, 9 to 5, you know, day in and day out type of deal.
Yeah. I would say that it was one of the best decisions of my life. I mean, starting – one of the awesome things is that you have a startup. You're kind of captain of your own ship. And you're also every day, despite the difficulties – and there's difficulties, you know, financially, emotionally, in every way you can kind of dream. But you're doing this for yourself. And you're also fighting a really noble cause. I mean, we get emails all the time from people who are – going bankrupt, who are sick and can't afford care, and they could afford it if they just knew where to go. Like
wow.
Every day I get emails like that, and it reminds me of why I'm doing this. Despite the difficulties, it's worth doing.
How do they reach out to you? Have they read about you in other publications or things?
Yes.
Wow.
We get a lot of press for this because we kind of say, sadly, it's revolutionary that you can find out how much you're going to spend before you go to the doctor.
It is shocking.
I mean, you know, if I was releasing an app for buying milk, nobody would care. But for the doctor, you know, so we get quite a bit of press nationally for it. And I've left my personal email address on the website for a reason. I want to hear from people. You know, we get a lot of individuals that say, I need help, and I'm not able to give them the app because we only work with companies, but I can give them tips on, you know, their particular situation. It's not medical advice, but I can tell them generally some good guidelines to follow in saving money on their own for healthcare.
Medical cost advice, really.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. And with all of that publicity, you've had some interest from, you know, bigger fish.
The big
West Coast companies who we won't name or anything, or I don't know, but I mean, you've attracted some major interest. Is that right?
That's right. It's actually really, really interesting. We've had calls from VC, very large VC firms that are very well known on both the East and West Coast and in other states as well, who have heard about us. They know what we're doing. They know who we are. They know our story. And, you know, every one of them say, we're watching you guys. You know, you've come up in a lot of meetings or
wow.
we've had, you know, your names have come up in discussions we've had nationwide and we want to know more about you, or we're watching you guys, you know, to see how you execute and how things roll out and how you guys scale. And, you know, they all say, you know, once you hit X number of dollars in revenue, call us. We're interested in putting in, you know, a lot more money than we have
wow.
currently. So.
And so it's literally just a hitting a certain milestone and then they'll call us back.
That's right.
Is there a very specific business plan that at which point you expect to reach that milestone, or like, is it, you know, this year, next year, next quarter, you know, how business people talk?
Yeah, with startups, it's interesting because, you know, we do, you know, there's that old saying that, you know, you throw the battle plan out 15 minutes after the battle starts. It was kind of like that. You know, when you form, we don't really form business plans as much as we form business models now. And we have revenue goals and we have kind of some of those traditional mile markers that you establish. But sometimes they're met way faster than you think. And sometimes it takes a lot longer to meet, you know, a development milestone, for instance. So we do have them and we do stick to them as much as we can. But you know, healthcare, it's interesting. It's an old market, but this particular part of it is extremely fast moving. And with all the chaos that's gone on in healthcare in the last couple of years, it's ripe for development. It's ripe for change. And that makes the current very swift. So, you know, we stay on top of that whole, you know, our business model has pivoted a couple of times over the last couple of years. We've made tweaks to it. We always stumble across kind of parallel markets that we never knew about before that we kind of make a version of Medify for and we're able to capitalize on. So it's actually been very interesting as we've gone along how we pivoted, tweaked, and changed.
Well, the name of the company is Medify. It's a startup right here in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And we were talking to its co-founders today, Matt Scoville and Nathan Gilchrist. Gentlemen, thank you so much for your time.
Oh, absolutely. Please. Thank you very much for having us.
Matt Scoville and Nathan Gilchrist are co-founders of a Tulsa-based startup called Medify. Well, that's our show for today. Studio Tulsa on Health is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views expressed by our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of KWGS or the University of Tulsa. If you've missed any of our shows, you can listen online anytime at our website, studiotulsa.org. I'm John Schumann, sitting in for Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.